Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey folks, this is Ed Fallon, your host, broadcasting from Des Moines, Iowa, where it is sweltering hot today like it is in much of the country. Hey, underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan, local, and global foods, and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Reminder that our program's bumper music provided by the Des Moines Average Session, and if you're in Iowa, they will be performing this weekend. I said we will be performing this weekend at the Iowa Irish Festival. Okay, later in the show, we'll be discussing pipelines, carbon dioxide sequestration, the November election, of course, and a bunch of other things. Also, Katy Perry's fiery rebuke of President Trump. But first, let's talk about money. It's all about money, right? You know? Some days you think so. I want to talk about cash. I want to start though by talking about Dave Ramsey. Yeah, that may surprise you. I'm not a huge fan of Dave Ramsey. Maybe you've heard of him. Big money guy. He talks about investing and how to manage one's finances. He's a bright fellow. He's made a lot of money doing it too. He's also got a huge radio presence. I guess he's worth about $55 million, according to an online search I did. He's a Trump supporter, but not a blind follower of Trump. When Trump rolled out the Trump accounts, he called it, quote, a political stunt. I was surprised Trump didn't rebuke him for that. But anyway, he's, I'm lukewarm on Ramsey at best. But I love that he advises people not to use credit cards. And I love that he defends cash. And I want to share with you something sent to me. I didn't happen to catch this conversation on this program. I was probably too busy listening to Clay and Buck, Rush Limbaugh's successors. Anyway, Ramsey talks about what a cashless society would actually mean. And remember, you know, a cashless society is what the big banks want. And it's what many within the U.S. government want. I'll read you what Ramsey wrote about this. But a cashless society means fully digital, fully traceable, fully controlled. Ramsey says that those who support a cashless society aren't fully aware of what they're asking for. A cashless society means if you are struggling with your mortgage on a particular month, you can't do an odd job to get you through. Your child can't go and help the local farmer to earn a bit of summer cash. No more cash slipped into the hands of a child as a good luck charm or from their grandparent when going on holidays. And I got to add this, folks. What about Joe Biden? So Kathy and I are at a Joe Biden event back in 2019. And it's crowded. It's packed with people. I'm getting ready to ask him a question about pipelines again. And we see him slip $5 to a kid for an ice cream. There's an ice cream truck out in front. He slips the kid $5, each kid, $5 to go buy some ice cream. If in a cashless world, Joe Biden would not be able to do that. All right, so what else does Ramsey warn us about? No more money in birthday cards. No more piggy banks for your child to collect pocket money and to learn about the value of earning. No more cash for a rainy day fund or for that something special you've been putting $20 away a week for. And I would add, no more egg money. We've talked about egg money before on this program. Kathy and I, we have our egg money jar. And egg money is, in rural communities, there's a long history of egg money. And actually, there's a great song about Get Your Hands Off My Egg Money. It's that money you get from selling eggs that you keep in a special place to use at a special time, at a special moment. Well, in a cashless world, we no longer have any egg money. It may seem like a small matter, and yes, it is. Okay, what else does Ramsey remind us of? No more little jobs on the side because your wages barely cover the bills or put food on the table. No more charity collections. No more selling bits and pieces from your home that you no longer want or need for a bit of cash in return. No more cash gifts from relatives or loved ones. What a cashless society does guarantee, that banks have full control of every single penny you own. They control every transaction you make. It's all recorded. All your movements and actions are traceable. Because, you know, wherever you go to use your credit card or your some kind of electronic payment, there's a record of that. They know not only what you buy, but where you buy it, where you go. Do we really want that level of intrusion into our private lives? What else does Ramsey have to say about that? Access to your money can be blocked at the click of a button if banks need, quote, clarification from you, which will take about 3 weeks. 1,000 questions and 5,000 passwords. Okay, he exaggerates, but we get the point. And yeah, there's nobody more frustrated by passwords. Well, I probably have a lot of company. Very frustrated by password insanity. Okay, what else? You will have no choice but to declare and be taxed on every dollar in your possession. The government will decide what you can and cannot purchase. He may be going too far on that. If your transactions are deemed in any way questionable by those who create the questions, your money will be frozen for your own good. So bottom line is, cash gives you control over what you do, how you interact with the world. You know, you have independence. You have some capacity to, you know, basically act privately. And I know some of the people deriding cash say that, well, you know, cash is great if you want to embezzle money or if you're involved in some kind of drug trade or arms trade or something like that. Well, yeah, there's always going to be bad actors. I would rather take my chances with those bad actors than the bad actors on Wall Street who are absolutely already abusing their power of finance, and we'll abuse it even greater, in even greater levels, if cash gets outlawed. So, you know, Ramsey advises pay with cash and say no to a cashless society while you still have a choice. And I'll add to that, you know, there are places already in Des Moines that don't accept cash. I'm going to name one, the Beer Garden. I like the Beer Garden. It's kind of a fun place. But they don't accept cash. And you know what? I will never spend a penny there because I don't have a credit card. They would probably take my debit card, but I don't want to do that. I want to be able to pay cash. On the flip side, I like that there are more and more businesses that are giving you a discount for cash, or restaurants in particular. You pay in cash, you get a lower price. Thank you. I thank them when they do that. Okay, so speaking of cash, who's winning the so-called cash war in the political universe? And it's mostly a wireless transaction war, okay? I've donated to candidates and sometimes have a hard time doing that because I don't want to go through ActBlue or whatever online platform they use. I just want to give them a check. And I understand why it's not a good idea to give a candidate cash. There should be some traceability when it comes to how politicians are funding their campaigns. I get that. That could be done with a check. Okay, so the cash war in the political universe. Interesting reports out last week about that. And if just at the surface, it looks like the money grab for federal candidates is going very well for Democrats. And yeah, they're outraising Republicans, and everyone thinks that's good. But to me, it's a clear sign that our system is totally broken. When I first got elected, the conventional wisdom was that Republicans had the money to fund their campaigns. Democrats had the shoe leather. We were willing to go out and work hard to get elected. And, you know, that's changed now. Both Democrats and Republicans now each have tons of money. When I first ran, by the way, 1992, I spent $6,000 with a $100 cap per donation to oust a 10-year incumbent. And for 14 years, I never took more than $100. That was always my cap. I never changed it. I didn't adjust it for inflation. I only took $100 from anybody, no more, no less. No one, well, yes, less, but no more. But yeah, you know, even more amazing, a guy named Mike Fitzgerald. I think Mike was the longest serving state treasurer in the U.S. He was Iowa's state treasurer from 82 until just recently. And on his first campaign, he told me once, he raised $6,000. 1982, $6,000 to run a statewide campaign in Iowa and win. But nowadays, again, it's just out of control. It is so out of control. And Democrats are outraising Republicans. It's interesting because if you look at the 9 battleground states for the U.S. Senate, Democrats have far outraised their Republican opponents in most of them, all but one, actually. And that's Iowa, where the Republican candidate, Ashley Hinson, has outraised, by a little bit, the Democratic candidate, Josh Turek. So again, people look at all this thing. Oh, Democrats is looking pretty good. But campaign finance laws have changed, gone from bad to worse. A candidate's fundraising for their campaign is now only one piece of that pie. Republicans have these two huge advantages. They've got these super PACs, and they've got a national party and national party committees. And because of the recent Supreme Court decision that lifted, you know, rules on how PAC money could be, you know, interchanged with individual campaigns, suddenly Republicans' financing is looking, you know, more powerful than Democrats. For example, Republicans have $380 million in the two national party super PACs. Democrats have $193 million, about half of that, but still a ton of money, right? Anyway, Republicans also have $125 million in the bank for the Republican National Committee. The Democratic equivalent, the DNC, which we'll talk about more later in the program, the DNC is $3 million in debt. So again, Republicans, $125 million, Democrats, $3 million in debt. On top of that, President Trump has a super PAC, the MAGA Inc. PAC. They have that has $382 million. And of course, a lot of that's coming from big donors and a lot of these corporations that are cozying up to Trump for special favors, certainly a lot in the AI industry. Yeah, and there's no Democratic equivalent to MAGA Inc. So I'll read your quote from the New York Times about this situation. The Democrats would seem to have a lot going for them this cycle. Trump is unpopular, and he's historically been a huge motivator for their voters. That's helped Democrats attract small dollar donations, but it hasn't translated to an overall fundraising advantage because Republicans are doing so well with big donors and corporations. Okay, so I would also add that Democrats have done pretty well with big donors and big corporations. But right now, and given the fact that you've got a guy in the White House who's you know, pay to play, a lot of the top dollar donations are going his way. And Democrats are bemoaning that. And my response is, and we'll talk more about this a little bit later, but, you know, it's not all about the money. There are other things that are way more important than money. And that could be your focus. I want to talk about one more thing when it comes to money, then we're going to move on. This is fascinating to me. Charitable giving. Okay, we all know about charitable giving. That's a good thing, right? Well, Robert Reich, he's the former Bill Clinton Commerce Secretary. He's also a current writer. He writes prolifically these days. Probably him and his team. Says, quote, "We're on the cusp of the biggest gusher of charitable giving in history. Beware." So this is kind of complicated. I don't want to get into it in great detail, but the way our tax code works, there's a giant loophole that lets the richest people in the U.S. take a big slice out of their tax bills so they can fund their own priorities through charitable giving. It's very complicated. I don't want to get into it in great detail. But, you know, charities includes universities, Reich points out opera houses, other cultural venues the rich like to be seen at. you know, I mean, I guess I like some of those places too. I'm not a big fan of opera houses. The bottom line is every dollar of charitable giving that the richest Americans, you know, spend, like give away, it reduces their taxes. Here's what Reich said. According to the Institute for Policy Studies, up to 74 cents of every dollar donated to charity would have been paid as taxes. So in 2022 alone, charitable giving resulted in $73 billion in lost tax revenue. So, you know, Reich reminds us that taxes finance public goods such as education, scientific research, roads and bridges, nutrition, healthcare. Yeah, they do that. Unfortunately, a lot of those things are being ignored by the current crop of DC politicians. And again, Democrats are part of that problem as well. And meanwhile, the president and Congress are talking about a $1.5 trillion military budget. So it's hard for me to get excited about, you know, about paying taxes, honestly. But I get it. This is a way that the wealthy have found to give money to charities that they value. You know, wealthy Republicans can give to the Heritage Foundation's Educational Fund, I suppose, or some other, quote, charitable equivalent. See their money go to support things that they benefit from instead of going to the general fund where Congress and the president decide how to allocate resources fairly. In theory, again, that's a great theory. Hard to take it too seriously when you're looking at a $1.5 trillion military budget. But the bottom line is we're basically giving them all kinds of breaks in terms of what they owe in taxes. And this is about, as Reich points out, this is about to get much, much worse because of the AI boom. He's estimating that about $100 billion a year is going to be going into charitable giving, $100 billion a year. And that's going to be coming from, specifically from the AI industry, the people who are making tons of money in AI. And again, that's going to reduce what they pay in taxes significantly, in some cases completely. And, you know, and what are we looking at here? Let's see, 4,400 new millionaires that have been created by the SpaceX program, as well as OpenAI's IPO, likely to create many more millionaires and multimillionaires. And we're talking about really big money. Anyway, you know, I don't understand how all this stuff works really well. I'm just pointing it out that this came across my desk and I thought, this deserves some consideration and hopefully you'll look into it more. Hopefully some of you will understand it better than I do. And, you know, try to convince your members of Congress to do something about it. All right, I got one more thing for you here, folks. So we've seen this before where politicians will use the music of, you know, a famous person for a shameless promotion. We've seen it many times. This one was one of the worst I've ever seen. It was the Trump White House using a Katy Perry song, Firework, in a TikTok video showing U.S. military strikes on Iranian targets. And Perry is really unhappy about it and said, quote, "I did not approve this. I was not asked, and I absolutely do not condone it. I wrote this song, Firework, to be an anthem of hope, healing, and inner strength. My music is for bringing people together, not celebrating warfare." Good for her. Hey, back in a minute, folks. Underwriting provided by Dr. Kim Holding with Story County Veterinary Clinic, serving Story County pets for over 30 years. More information at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Show them why you work. Make them go.
thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you here, folks, broadcasting from Des Moines, Iowa, with content important to you wherever you live in this country of ours. Hey, underwriting for the Fallon Forum provided by real estate agent Joe Henry. More information at 515-208-7312. All right, we're going to talk about carbon storage. We've talked about this a lot on this program because Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota are all impacted by the Summit carbon pipeline. But this is a different carbon situation. This is a plan to bury carbon under farmland and under the town of Clymers, Indiana. It's being sold as a pro-climate action, as a way to address global warming. And yeah, we've heard that before. We've heard that same story about the carbon dioxide pipeline in the upper Midwest. We need this to fight climate change. When that argument no longer became popular, they dropped it like a hot potato. So the carbon sequestration proposal for Clymers, it's also involving ethanol plants. And it also involves, not surprisingly, being paid for by a federal tax credit called the 45Q tax credit. And again, no pipelines involved in this. They want to just basically pump it underground. A nearby ethanol plant would put it underground, under the town of Clymers, and under neighboring farmland. Clymers is a small, declining town. And every time I use the word decline describing a small town, I'm saddened by it. But it is unfortunately more common than not. And Clymers is already dealing with decline, but along with that, pollution from various industrial agricultural facilities. That includes a fertilizer supplier, a hazardous waste recycling company, and also the giant ethanol plant that wants to sequester this carbon underground. So the one of the specific impacts of that pollution, too, is that it's contaminated well water. We'll talk more about that later. And also just the impact on sewage facilities. And I'd have to imagine that it would impact air quality as well. So a while back, residents got this great letter from the company that wants to build this thing. And it was asking them to accept money every year in exchange for having this carbon sink under their properties. And you want to know the glorious sum of money that the company is offering to pay people? $150. Come on, you're for real? I mean, in Iowa, when we were up against the Dakota Access Pipeline, and even still with the carbon dioxide pipeline, and we're looking at figures in the tens of thousands of dollars being offered. And again, none of that even comes close to what people who have wind turbines on their property earn, because they get paid every year between $8,000 and $10,000 every year for every turbine. So this is like a joke, $150 a year. Okay. I thought it was a joke. Apparently it's not. And apparently the company behind this proposal is Anderson's Renewables. Don't we love the name Anderson? And we love the word renewable, right? So this has got to be great. And the company, they claim that their proposal, quote, is a safe, established technology with the rigorous permitting, engineering, and monitoring process to protect groundwater, public health, and the surrounding environment. The proposed project would capture carbon dioxide from the ethanol production process, compress it, and then inject it deep underground, more than 3,000 feet, into geological formations identified for permanent storage. Doesn't that sound great, folks? Safe, you know, again, based on what? Based on what? This is, quote, a new technology. Established, again, it's a new technology. And, you know, and for how long is this really going to be stored? Well, so a funny thing there. They say they're going to pump it 3,000 feet underground. Now, I believe that these companies will say whatever they feel they have to say to win public opinion and to win congressional support for whatever they need. They're going to say whatever they have to say. In other words, they're going to lie through their teeth. They don't give a dang. So Summit, again, the pipeline company here in Iowa, that wants to have this vast network of pipelines covering five states. Their original video, they said they would pump it 5,000 feet underground, a mile underground, over a mile, and that it would be underground for over a million years. How do you possibly even say that with any credibility? We can't say anything about anything for a million years. So Anderson's Renewables, great company name. Guess what? Partly owned by a subsidiary of Marathon Oil. So, same situation in Iowa. The pipeline proposal here, the carbon dioxide proposals, involves big oil. Valero was one of the partners here. And, you always hear about big oil and ethanol fighting each other. Ethanol wants more of a share of the market. Big oil doesn't want ethanol to be able to, you know, to expand year-round. But, you know, it's really big oil and big ethanol versus small towns, right? Versus landowners, versus farmers. And, in fact, a little quote in The Guardian really points this out really well. Quote, oil industry companies are often sponsors and benefactors of these projects. Okay, we know that. And now you know it too. So here's the big story. What's proposed for Little Climbers, Indiana, is happening in dozens of places across the U.S. And this is going to be a bigger story, folks. As of now, it looks like the EPA is set to approve these projects. Okay? This is the EPA that, you know, fought, that supposedly Trump was going to make sure it defended the little guy. It didn't let the crazy, wild-eyed environmentalists come in and tell farmers what they could do and couldn't do with the little streamlet running across their land. Both Democratic and Republican presidential administrations, all of them, have supported these plans in the past. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times Kathy and I lobbied Joe Biden to, you know, clarify where he stood on pipelines, where he stood on carbon dioxide, where he stood on oil pipelines. Actually, I think I got to say that was lobbying Biden was barely, but pre-carbon dioxide pipeline. But the arguments were the same. Are you going to allow companies, big companies, to take federal money, taxpayer money, to build things across farmers' and landowners' property that they don't want, using eminent domain to do it? And that's one reason I got poked in the chest by Joe Biden. Anyway. And it was the Biden administration that authorized this lucrative tax credit, the 45Q tax credit program, through the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, along comes President Trump calling climate change a hoax. Again, one of the original arguments for the CO2 pipelines is it's going to help fight climate change. We're going to take that carbon dioxide that would be going up into the atmosphere, creating all this carbon pollution. We're going to put it underground where it's, quote, safe for a million years. And so, you know, Trump hates everything about climate change, hates everything about Joe Biden, and has gone the extra mile to try to squelch all wind power projects, solar projects, any kind of climate initiative. The Trump administration tries to crush it. Well, you know what? There's one that he's okay with. That's the so-called climate initiative involving the 45Q tax credits that allowed these carbon dioxide pipelines to be built, and that also allow carbon sequestration without pipelines to happen in places like Clymers, Indiana. So some have called what's happening now a carbon capture gold rush. All this federal money, it's not, you know, when I say federal money, I mean your money, my money, our money, going to the federal government and then being doled out to big oil and big ethanol companies. I don't have the name in front of me, but there was an industry insider. I wish maybe that name is escaping me because it was anonymous. But the industry insider warns that a, quote, huge wave of these kinds of carbon capture projects is about to be approved. A small project like the one in Clymers that sequesters, say, 200,000 tons of carbon per year, that can earn $17 million just from the 45Q tax credits. And again, some of these projects are going to be huge. They're going to be earning a lot more than that. And when I say earning, you know, I really shouldn't use that word because they're not earning. They're milking the public, you know, the tax cow that we pay for, that Congress and, in this case, a Democratic president followed by a Republican president feel very inclined just to dole out that money to big interests. There's an MIT professor, Charles Harvey. He's a civil and engineering, environmental engineering, and he helped start one of the world's first companies devoted to sequestering carbon dioxide. And it was done on the premise of, hey, let's address climate change by pumping this stuff somewhere safe instead of up into the atmosphere. But you know what? That was back in the early 2000s that he worked on that he came up with that company. Now, he is a staunch opponent of this strategy. Quoting Harvey, quote, it's just the stupidest way to reduce emissions. It is loved by the industry because it's a subsidy for whatever they're already doing. And to be clear, people, there is not just a waste of our tax dollars. There's pollution that goes along with this. There will be leaks, just like with oil pipelines. There will be leaks. People will die. People haven't died yet, but they sure came close in Sadarshi, Mississippi, when a pipeline carrying carbon dioxide down there ruptured years ago. I think, 49 people were sent to the hospital, and it really is amazing that none of them died. So, yeah, and there have already been leaks in neighboring Illinois, next to Indiana. There have already been leaks in Illinois. Archer Daniels Midland, ADM, they leaked a salty brine into unauthorized underground areas that were 5,000 feet deep in 2024, just 2 years ago. And later in 2024, at the ADM plant in Decatur, Illinois, that plant had to be idled after more contaminants were detected. So the EPA, of course, issued a notice of violation, and perhaps ADM got a slap on the wrist. But now the EPA under Trump is again preparing to authorize all kinds of additional projects. So, you know, and again, these leaks happen, folks. Here in Iowa, the Dakota Access Pipeline has seen a few minor leaks, nothing major yet. We haven't had the big one. There have been big ones all over the country. And actually, you should search for, online, search for Wikipedia list of oil spills. This is fascinating. When you pull that up, my kudos to whoever is doing the updating on that, because it's amazing that they have it updated as soon as anything happens. And as you scroll down, you, like me, probably will be absolutely astounded as to how long is that list of spills and leaks. So, again, back to Indiana, residents of Clymers were told by company officials at a meeting that the carbon storage was perfectly safe and couldn't leak. And a farmer, Dennis Kroom, quoted in one story, said, I said that's bullcrap. And you know what? I can say that on an FCC-regulated station. I'm so happy about that. I said that's bullcrap. I'm worried about my well, said Dennis Kroom, a farmer. And he refused to sign the form offering him $150 an acre to accept the plan. But get this. Indiana state law essentially removes his individual right to reject that payment, to reject the proposal. You know, he may be stuck with having to have that stuff pumped under his land. Climbers may be sitting on a cloud of carbon dioxide against their will. You know, again, just to conclude with Kroom here, I'm trying to look out for our grandkids, he said. He has 11 of them living nearby. We got to do something for the environment. All right, folks, I got to take a short break here. Back in a minute with you. Again, this is Ed Fallon with you on the Fallon Forum. Reminder that underwriting for this program provided by Westrum Optometry. More information at 515-789-3055. Thanks to our nonprofit partners, including Circle of Peacemakers. Formerly the Catholic Peace Ministry, Circle of Peacemakers works with people of all faiths toward a world without war. CPM opposes runaway military spending while domestic needs go unmet. Instead of endless wars, CPM supports diplomacy. Visit CircleOfPeacemakers.com. At Westrum Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrum and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrum's primary concern. Dr. Westrum and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. This is Ed Fallon, and we're coming to you from Des Moines, Iowa. Underwriting provided by Architecture by Synthesis. More at architecturebysynthesis.com. Hey, before we talk about election-related stuff, and I'm going to be a broken record on that. We got to talk about that all the time. This kind of is a tie-in to our last conversation. Fights against pipelines and, you know, carbon dioxide related projects are not just in the U.S. either. Here's one I just learned about in Africa. They want to build a cross-continental pipeline, an oil pipeline, from Uganda to Tanzania. It's a $5.6 million project. It's a French company, Total Energies, is behind it. Yay, France, still messing up Africa. Apparently doing it with the cooperation of the English as well. So Ugandan and Tanzanian farmers and a bunch of advocacy groups have staged protests, court challenges. They're arguing that this, about a 1,000-mile-long pipeline threatens fresh water, uproots agricultural communities, and accelerates climate risks. So we'll see. One lawsuit is seeking to use Uganda's climate law to argue against the pipeline. I did not know Uganda had a climate law. Good for them. Maybe we should learn from them. Related to that, in this country, we've talked before about how the Colorado River is in big trouble out west. So we got our own water problems here in the Midwest with the Oglala Aquifer. The Oglala Aquifer is about 174 square miles across. It covers 8 states. The biggest one is Nebraska. It's pretty much all in Nebraska. But South Dakota, all the way down to Texas. And it provides about 30% of all the groundwater used for U.S. irrigation. Huge. But, the thing about aquifers is they replenish very slowly, and we've been using the water pretty quickly. So water levels have plunged by 262 feet, leaving parts of the underground reservoir completely depleted and threatening this area's farming and rural communities. So, it's not going to get any better unless we change our habits. We'll see if that happens. Yeah, and I know I can say a lot more about that, and we will. But I got to turn to the midterm elections. So this is complicated, and I'm sorry to have to dump on you, but it's important to know and to try to understand such matters. This is from an opinion piece in the New York Times by Jeffrey Toobin, and it focuses on the efforts of one member of Congress, the Democrat from upstate New York, a guy named Joe Morrell, who's been trying to make sure that all the bases get covered in terms of protecting our election integrity. So I'm going to read you a little bit from this story about him. So the process for installing a new House of Representatives begins when states certify the results of each of the 435 House races. And again, the rules vary by state, but most require officials to certify by late November, early December, who won the election. So in recent years, local officials who've been aligned with Trump have often used false claims of fraud or non-citizens voting as a justification to refuse to certify the election results. And again, this is not just from the past, this is not just from 2020, but since 2020, there are about 30 local officials in Arizona, Colorado, Georgia, Michigan, New Mexico, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania who have refused to certify election results. And oftentimes their motivation was to delay or deny Democratic victories. So if there are, now Morrell postulates that if there are similar delays and refusals after November 3rd, that's the date of the election this fall, Morrell feels that Democrats or people, organizations that that value election integrity, ought to sue. In past years, Democrats have had success in winning court rulings that force local officials to certify results. Yeah, and, you know, they'll probably win these kinds of cases again. No doubt there'll be delays and appeals and things like that. But, yeah, you know, one disaster scenario that Mr. Morrell points to is this. After results show Democrats winning a majority in the U.S. House, the president declares that the election is full of fraud and the winners don't need to be certified. Trump could then demand that Speaker Mike Johnson fire the current House clerk, because he's a guy named McCumber, who is reasonably nonpartisan, Republican, but, you know, not unfair, not biased, not inclined to shenanigans. So Mr. Johnson is able to do that. The Speaker can do that. And then, under the procedures of the U.S. House, Johnson could then install a friendly successor, one that is a Trump ally, one that will do whatever Trump tells Johnson to tell the clerk to do. And so at President Trump's instigation, they would produce a roll of new House members that included Republicans in races that Democrats believed they had won. So this is interesting. Of all the tricks and things that Republicans are trying to make sure they win the election this fall, gerrymandering being the most prominent, this is the one I've seen the least attention given to, and it's intriguing to me. So Representative Morrell plans to keep things as simple as possible. He says, get the certificates of who won the election in hand, you know, from the states, and press his colleagues in both parties to abide by those results. So get Republicans to agree that, yeah, we will abide by those results. I don't know whether there's enough backbone left in the Republican Party to do that. Clearly, we saw some backbone, and some of that was defeated. Thomas Massie most prominently comes to mind. You know, Trump, when he doesn't like you, if you're a Republican, if you're not doing what he wants, he will find a person to challenge you, endorse that person, pump a lot of money into their campaign, and the way things have been going, they've been winning. So good for Morrell for reaching across the aisle. Whether that's possible or not, I don't know. Continuing though, let's see, once the certificate of election comes into the House clerk, the clerk is bound under law and under the courts to put those people in the roll. Morrell is actually optimistic about how this is going to turn out. He says, quote, "The American people, I think, are not going to just sit by while an election which has given a Democratic majority of the House is taken away by some subterfuge that involves a removal of the sitting clerk and an acting clerk put in his place who happens to be an election denier. Well, I appreciate his optimism, and I think he's right. The American people are not going to tolerate it. But will there be enough Republicans in the U.S. House to stand up to Trump? Because there's no doubt Trump is going to do everything he can to make sure that the House remains Republican, that the U.S. Senate remain Republican, because he needs that to keep his agenda of consolidating power in the administration moving forward. He's done a bunch of things without Congress, but if you had a Democratic Congress, then they might put some roadblocks. Again, I'm not a huge fan of the Democratic Party, folks. I see a party that's really out of touch, that is become more focused on money and less focused on bread and butter issues, a party that has totally abandoned rural America, a party that, has paid less attention to the concerns of working people, which is why you see more and more union members voting Republican. I think we're beginning to see that change. And maybe that change is profound enough right now that people will notice. Combine that with the fact that people are more and more dissatisfied with where Trump is leading this country, whether into a war with Iran, whether approving these carbon dioxide projects we talked about earlier, the tariffs. There's so many ways in which people are saying, this is not what we voted for. So, yeah, I do agree with Morrell, with Representative Morrell, that the American people are going to put up with this, but I don't know if even a supermajority of the public can prevent the U.S. House from doing what Trump wants. I see Democrats winning seats and not getting seated in the U.S. House. I see Republicans who might have lost those races being seated instead. This is disturbing. This is deeply disturbing. And I think the fact that we are talking about it is important. And I think what we discussed last week, Rick Wilson, the former Republican operative who says, hey, watch this stuff, pay attention, get on it now. I think his key point was this. If elections are close, then they can be stolen. If elections are landslides, and for him, a landslide means 8 percentage points or more, then it's hard to steal it. And I don't know with this tactic that Representative Morrell is bringing to our attention, who knows? Maybe that also is going to be hard to fight. I don't know. But again, I think the key is talk to Republican voters who may have a connection to a Republican lawmaker. And get them to say, hey, if a Democrat wins, will you agree to seat that person? I mean, this has never happened before. This is always just a matter of routine. We saw that routine interrupted in 2020 with a gallows specifically built to hang Mike Pence. I mean, there was really an effort to not allow the election results to be enforced. And I think these people are ready to try to do that again. Anyway, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I think this is good information. Let's keep an eye on it. Let's continue to pay attention and continue to remember that everything we do to kind of speak out about the integrity of our election now is really, really important. Hey, back in a minute, and a reminder that underwriting for this program is provided by Dr. David Drake, a psychiatrist serving patients in Iowa and Colorado. More information at 515-229-5085. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fowling Forum. Underwriting for this program provided by Gateway Market, a Des Moines grocery and cafe offering artisan local and global foods and catering for business and social events. More information at gatewaymarket.com. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
I hear we're talking about strawberries.
We are.
Or berries generally.
Berries in general, but I'll start with strawberries because you probably have a similar memory. Right around 1982, a neighbor grew some really beautiful strawberries, and they were small, they were really delicious, and we would be invited to go pick strawberries. You had to, you know, get down on your hands and knees and get under the leaves and pick, and then we would go back the next day and pick a few more because you wanted to get all of them right when they were perfect, and then when the season was over, you didn't have berries anymore, at least not that good. Not that good of berries.
And for me, I think it was maybe 1970, 71, 72. I would go down the woods behind my house, and I knew where there was a patch of mm-hmm. wild strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
And I would pick those.
And did you just shove them in your mouth as you picked, or did you take them home?
Both.
Because your mom liked them a lot, too.
Yeah, some mouth shoveling going on there, but also I brought some home, sure.
Your mom also liked to pick those Maine blueberries.
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
it ain't the same way these days, is it?
It's not. Because there are berries of all kinds available year-round. And that is, I guess, in large part because of Driscoll's company with their berry growing. There are many more berries grown now, but by fewer farmers.
That's kind of the situation with all kinds of agriculture. What are we looking at in terms of number of producers now versus, say, 20, 30 years ago?
Well, my scenario in 1982, during that time, okay. 135,867 U.S. farms were reported on census as having berries for sale. That was on 135,000 acres of land. And in just as recently as 2022, the number of total farms was down to 35,000, but that was on 355,000 acres of land. So we're talking about 1/4 of the number of farms occupying 2.5 times the acreage of land.
Okay. Big operations. How big is Driscoll's?
They are second in annual supermarket earnings only to the Coca-Cola company at $7 billion worth right now.
So they're ahead of Pepsi?
It seems so. It seems okay. So. Well, Coke always had it.
And they're ahead of Pepsi. Ahead of Taylor Farms? Okay.
We talked about them last week.
Yeah.
With the lettuce.
Wow. Okay.
And such.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's still, yeah, okay.
Well, it was in 1989 that the Driscoll's company board made a decision to have every berry available in every season year-round around the globe. And you probably can imagine that doesn't mean farming, growing all the berries in soil. A lot of these are grown in, you know, hydroponic spaces or less land with more inputs and I don't want to say chemicals because I don't have all the data on that, but they grow a lot of berries. And they subcontract farmers to do most of the growing.
So again, kind of like with hogs here, farmers are working on contract.
Yeah.
They're not independent operators.
Yeah. Anymore. Labor is their biggest expense, the Driscoll's biggest expense. And the company said that the workers earn $20 to $30 per hour. But according to a New York Times story, the company declined to make any of those farmers, producers, available to be interviewed or photographed, citing privacy for the producer as the concern.
So I'd love to know, and this is more detail than we need to get into right now, but I'd love to know more about how this
contract arrangement works with farmers.
The New York Times article has a lot more information. Like see, so that's pretty interesting.
That, in my experience, that never goes well for the farmer. Never.
Well, people need to work.
Sure, I know. But,
So, you know, in addition, the berries can be delicious, but people have criticized Driscoll on issues such as water consumption, pollution, pesticide use, labor, as we mentioned. In 2002, there were some boycotts, strikes by employees over their environmental footprint, labor policies, and such. Just this past June, it seems that a former employee alleged that Driscoll's knowingly shipped products to Canada that violated Canada's very strict pesticide limits for what kind of produce they took into the country. That same employee was allegedly penalized by the company for for disclosing that to the company, to the country that was receiving their product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then whistleblowers, they need protection.
Yes, they do.
So, yeah, I mean, big concern I have is that, you know, we don't, we don't need to eat everything all year round, all the time. I mean, and we do actually have strawberries year round, but that's because we freeze them.
We pick them locally.
Yeah, locally, and then we make jam or freeze them. And you know, I wish more people would think about the value of that. There's really, it's really a great way to preserve the flavor.
It is, and you know, it's really handy. For people to go, they're going to a potluck or something. It's maybe even wintertime, but they want to, they have a dessert they're going to make or a salad they're going to make to get a spring flavor in the middle of winter, and they're going to pick up that one-time use plastic container full of beautiful red blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. Fruit pizzas are very popular, but you know, we can be creative and we can do something different if we really want to.
Right. Pick your own, buy your own, or buy local. Hey, thanks, Kathy. Thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, and Kathy Burns. Thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Underwriting provided by Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Also, Circle of Peacemakers, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. This is Ed Fallon, host of the Fallon Forum, and we'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio. Let me take you down.